April 16th, 2007. Mm-hmm. I'm Heather Martin interviewing Dr. McCullum Clark. Just to start off, when did you come to Millersville?
1994, the fall of 1994.
Okay, what did you find when you got here?
When I got here? What did I find?
Just as far as women.
Oh, okay. Well, the English department had a fair smattering of women. I'm in the English department, and at the time they weren't in any kind of leadership positions. The chair and the assistant chair were both male. But there were, I don't think we were quite at 50%, but we weren't too far away from 50%.
Okay. So. How would you assess the university environment right now for female students?
You know, I don't know that much about it. I wish I knew more what they experienced. I was telling my spouse the other day that I've never been in a dorm. I've never been in Gordonier. I mean, in the calf part.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I don't have that big of a sense of the campus life for young women. But, you know, as far as my students seem, they seem pretty happy and content with their lives here.
Okay, good. And what about the faculty here right now?
For women?
Yes.
I don't know of any major complaints that are gender related. Of course, there are lots of complaints, but they're not usually gender related. I think, you know, one thing I've seen over the 13 years that I were coming on 13 years that I've been here is more and more women faculty, more young women faculty. And certainly true in our department, probably. I know we're over half women now. And I think when I came, we were probably somewhere around half. So we've had made an increase in terms of female faculty in my department. And our chair and our assistant chair right now are both women, which is a new thing. And the heads of two of our standing committees are both women. So we have three standing committees, and two are headed by women. So certainly don't see any kind of bias that way. You know, it's my experience at Millersville that if you're a positive person and you can get stuff done, your door will get knocked down. And you will be asked over and over again to do things. And a lot of times they're women, you know, that are doing that, particularly now.
Okay. Good. Do you know the mission statement for the Commission on the Status of Women? Anything about that?
I've read it. I couldn't quote it to you.
Okay. Do you have any views about that, the mission statement?
I'm glad it exists. I'm glad the Commission on Women exists because, especially in the past, you know, the life of a female faculty member was not, and in some ways the burdens are different. I have two small children.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently I lost my teaching partner to her two small children, and the lives of female faculty with children, I think, are a particular issue that has not really been addressed that much.
Okay.
Of course, young male faculty with children probably have similar issues, but not quite in the same way that we moms do. As a matter of fact, I missed all of last week in class, first because my 4-year-old son had strep throat, and then he shared it with me. And so Monday and Tuesday, I was home with him because he was ill, and I was here Wednesday for my office hours, and then Wednesday night, I became sick. So that's been a real struggle. And, you know, if the Commission for Women faculty could, you know, think about issues like that, that would be pretty neat. But, because it certainly impacts my working life here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it. Do you think that the Commission is accomplishing its mission on campus right now?
Well, you know, it's not really that high profile.
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably could raise its profile considerably. I think that's true of a lot of different groups on campus that are doing really good work. It's just that in the kind of push of everyday life, they get a little submerged, and you're not as aware of what they are trying to do. It takes a real intense effort to kind of raise your head above the bubble around here and let people know what you're doing. So I don't know if I could speak to that.
Okay.
I mean, I know they have a banquet once a year. They have kind of a big meeting and banquet. And if I'm not mistaken, it's usually on one of the nights I teach, so I've never been able to go.
Okay.
But that's really about all I know about what they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
In what ways do you think that the Commission could continue to reach people, like, in equal opportunity?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, silly stuff. Like, you know how every year we had this academic theme? Maybe you don't even know, because sometimes that's one of the things that's going to rise above the bubble. Yeah, every year at Millersville, we had this, there's a concept of the academic theme, and there are speakers that are associated with it. There are events. You know, so there used to be, like, banners and stuff. The people propose them, and then this committee selects them. And I probably only one year out of the 12 years that I've been here did it really impinge on people. And that was the year I knew two of my friends were involved with the theme that year, Keith Lauterbaugh in iTech and Barb Stengel up in Ed Foundations. And out of all the years that I've been here, I think that was the only year that it really registered with people. And I think it was called, the academic theme was a community of learners. And there were T-shirts, and there were buttons, and there were bumper stickers, and there were bookmarks, and they publicized it in the right way. I don't know if they just struck a chord. There were these buttons that people would wear, and if you would go into the SMAC or the library or Gournier, and somebody saw you wearing the button, they'd give you a prize. They'd give you like a T-shirt or a bumper sticker or a cup with the logo on it, and you know. I think that's the only year that notion of an academic theme really kind of reached above the bubble and mm-hmm. grabbed a hold of students and faculty and became something other than just something that we do.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think it's just a matter of that.
Increasing interest.
It's just a matter of publicity and engagement with the kind of issues and concerns that are tapping into what's already going on.
Okay.
So something like that would probably kind of raise the profile of them, and then there would be more, you know, connection, because there are a lot of groups that are interested in equal opportunity on campus. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of trying to pull them together and coordinating them, I guess.
Okay. How would you describe the recruitment and advancement of women in leadership positions at Millersville?
Well, I think it's grown a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. especially having a woman president, that's a pretty big to-do. Over the past, since I've been here, you know, two of the deans of the major schools have been women, and one now still is. We have a new, you know, female chair in our department. She's been in that position about 6 years now, or maybe more. I can't recall now. Probably a little bit more. So, no, I think it's definitely, I don't know the degree to which they're always recruited in the department, at the department level, you know, the department's kind of handle asking their colleagues to be nominated for chair, but I mean, I think we've seen some big strides in that. We used to have a female provost, and I've seen women in lots and lots of leadership roles since I've come.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What opportunities exist for you and other women for leadership positions at Millersville?
Well, obviously, departmental leadership. Right. There's a lot of leadership that's kind of cross-departmental in terms of, like, Senate committees and other, ABSCUF, the union, for example, has lots of opportunities to kind of craft leadership roles. I applied last year for the coordinator of general education, which is it's not really a Senate position. It's kind of a quasi-administrative role mm-hmm. where you would be charged with, like, the revision. Like, right now they're in this revision of general education.
Okay.
And I applied for that. And I did it with mixed feelings. I really was interested in the position and thought I had some skills to bring to it. But at the same time, you know, my teaching partner left. Well, she's still here. She's teaching only one class as an adjunct. But we haven't filled that position yet. And you know, in putting myself up for that role, I would be leaving my program behind. And so, you know, I had some mixed feelings about actually doing it, but I was sufficiently interested to throw my name out there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get it. But, and I don't think that had anything to do with my gender. The general right. education has been such a, they're right in the middle of that whole revision, and they thought it best to kind of stick with their current leadership, okay. which made perfect sense. So, you know, I think there are lots and lots and lots of opportunities. The question for female faculty is, once again, this balance of their responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
If they are you know, in a committed relationship or marriage, if they do have small children, the obligations of further leadership work are very difficult to balance with the needs of family and you know, however you construe family. It's just very hard. So, for example, I can't get here to my office hours until 9:15 because I can't drop my son off to school until 9 o'clock.
And right.
I have to pick him up at 3, and so that means meetings at 4. I have to pick my younger son up at 3. I have to be home by 3:40 for the bus for my older son.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday and Thursday nights, I teach evening classes. So I'm home for maybe an hour and a half, and then I have to come back for my evening classes. And it's been my experience that most male faculty members don't have to live like that.
Yeah.
They have somebody else, and it's usually their spouse,
right.
you know, meeting the bus and picking the kids up from school and making dinner and going to soccer practice. And if they have to work from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock at night, as I used to have to do, then that's no problem. And then you could fit in all kinds of committee meetings and
right.
work sessions and
extras.
Conference calls and whatever in the middle of that class schedule. So that's really, I think, a drawback for some of the younger women faculty that have families at home. It's just, and, you know, my chair is terrific in making sure that my teaching schedule can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
I know other chairs are not so gracious and considerate of schedules like that. There's some chairs in some departments that expect people to be here 5 days a week, regardless of when your teaching schedule is.
Right.
So, you know, that really argues against, I think, a lot of women faculty, younger women faculty, in taking on some of these leadership roles.
Because
the scheduling around your classes. Now, a position like the gen ed coordinator would have been, for me, a 3-class release, so I would have only taught one other class. So it might have been possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot easier to schedule something durable like a class in and amongst the requirements of my children's school schedule rather
right.
than, you know, random meetings
right.
that get scheduled all over the place. So, you know, even when there are opportunities, there's this calculus that has to go on about, you know, not only the regular calculus of are my gifts best suited to a position like that? Do I have something to offer? Is it gonna develop me in a new way for my, you know, personal satisfaction, career, profession, etc.? But also, how's that gonna fit into the whole family dynamic?
Okay. Do you feel that women face obstacles outside of the family at Millersville in getting leadership positions?
I don't think so. I think, you know, my experience here has been, like I said, if you're a positive-minded person, you know, who's not a complainer, who, you know, sees potentials and possibilities in things and is somebody who can accomplish things, somebody who can get things done, then the world is open to you. It seems like to me. I mean, that's been my experience, I mean, before my children were born and even since. There's so much work to be done here. There really is. And if you're willing and capable of doing it, I don't think your gender really holds you back. That's not been my experience.
Okay. How would you describe the professional advancement and development of women at Millersville and your own advancement and development?
In terms of, like, promotion and things like that?
Yeah, promotional advancement.
Well, you know, I think Millersville's fairly traditional in the way that it mentors and tries to develop young faculty members. I think it has a kind of an informal mentoring system, and that's, I think, better than a more formal one where you're kind of assigned a mentor. I think you have to kind of find the people that you respond to. And in my experience here at Millersville, they've mostly been women, for me anyway,
mm-hmm.
Both in my department and outside of my department. And that is a real plus. Of course, that's not a real institutional thing. That's more of a, people seeking like-minded people thing.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the more traditional model of, you know, supporting scholarship, things like that, I mean, that's really taken a big hit, I think, in the recent 4 or 5 years. When I first came here, there was, I think, a lot stronger institutional support for, like, traveling to conferences, things like that. The budget crunches have you know, made that more difficult without faculty funding for, you know, at least defraying some of your expenses to go to a conference. I went to the International Reading Association conference last May, and you know, with all the things totaled, it was probably $900, and I think I had $300 in university support. It's not quite enough.
Yeah.
So maybe I had a little bit more. I can't remember if I got any money from the Faculty Grants Committee. But most of the, I don't think that really differs for women. I don't think the university's pressures differ, except that, once again, they don't, they're kind of written in a kind of traditional way. They're kind of created in a traditional way and don't take, kind of, they take for granted that women faculty can behave in the same way that young men faculty can behave. And that's not always true. So I've done very little conference presentations in the last 5 years because of my children and their age, and
right.
just how difficult it is on my whole family for me to be gone for 3 or 4 days, just
right.
gone.
Yeah.
So that's pretty hard. So that kind of enters into your thinking of, well, I won't apply for that, or, hey, this one's in Baltimore, I can go to that one, you know,
yeah.
things like that. So that, but that's not institutional. That's not part of Millersville's gig. Except that they don't, they may not see how, you know, those pressures impact women faculty, and their model is very traditional, very old school.
Do you think that's like across the board at most universities?
Yes.
That's
yes.
not like specific.
I don't. Yes,
well.
Not at all. I think that's a culture of, you know, the change in faculty kind of demographics and the sluggishness of institutions to respond to issues like that.
Okay.
Like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess you are, you know, you have these other reasons for not attending, or for these old traditional ways of developing faculty maybe not being what you need. For example, there's something I've always wanted to do that the SHE system, the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Ed, has available. They have a teaching academy in the summer. I don't know where it is. I think it shifts around different institutions. And the dean has money. The dean will, you know, be delighted
mm-hmm.
to send any interested faculty to this. But it's like a week or 10 days. And, you know, for me now, there's just no way. I'd love to do it. I would love to do it and to bring more of a focus on teaching back to my department. And but there's no way. Can't do it.
Right.
You know, so that's a kind of example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that has changed over time? Like, when you first got here, was it better or worse?
No, it seems to be about the same.
About the same?
About the same. It's funny, I was the first female faculty member to be personally pregnant in our department. And the semester that I was personally pregnant for the first time, we had two women faculty members.
And oh, okay.
We actually had our babies within a week of each other. And at the same time, a third faculty member adopted a baby within maybe 3 months. But before that, there had never been, ever, a female pregnant faculty member. There had been men whose wives had babies.
Right.
But never, ever, a pregnant faculty member in the English department before.
Okay.
That would have been the fall of 97.
Wow.
So, never. And I remember somebody saying that, and I kind of went, you're kidding me. And then I looked around, and I realized that many of the other women faculty were much older, and
mm-hmm.
I had children, but at other, you know, parts of their lives, and not when they were full-time faculty members. I thought, ooh, I guess that is new.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
What's the policy on, like, time off for...
It's very liberal. As a matter of fact, the contract, I don't know if the most recent contract gives this, but you could take as much as 2 years off without pay.
Oh, wow.
And come back to your job. So that's very liberal.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that. I took both times. Well, the first time, when Eason was born at Christmas, he was born in December, I took 2 semesters off at half time. So I taught at night. I taught 2 classes
okay.
at night. And when my younger son was born, because Eason was around in the kindergarten range there, I took 2 years like that. I did 2 years at half time. So I never was gone entirely.
Okay.
I took the 6-week maternity leave kind of thing and
mm-hmm.
then came back and taught 2 evening classes. And, you know, that was terrific also to be able to kind of decide. I mean, I could have taught 1. I could have taught 2. I could have been gone entirely for 2 years and
mm-hmm.
come right back to my job. So that's pretty terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very good.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I on my list? What kinds of encouragement and resources are available to women who pursue educational and professional goals?
Like I said, kind of the traditional ones, you know, a little bit of financial support for promotion, for publishing and conferences. There are a variety of funds that you can apply to for research monies. You can apply for time off. I mean, not time off, but what they call release time. So right. If you have a significant research project, you can apply for a course release so that you'll still be paid as a full-time faculty member, but one of your classes will be given to someone else. So, for example, if you had two course release, you'd only teach two, which would free up a lot of time, you know, right. for your research or your writing. And then, of course, there's the sabbatical program. And, you know, from what I've seen, women get sabbaticals just as quickly as men. I'm sure that the statistics on that would be interesting, but in my experience with our department, the women who apply for them get them very readily if they have a valid and, you know, acceptable research agenda, or sometimes they're writing, sometimes they're researching, mm-hmm. the things that they do. I've never seen any gender issues kind of related to that, but so those are the main ways. Okay. The sabbatical, the research kind of grants, the release time, the funds for research. And
do you think, you were saying about all those programs, and you think mm-hmm. they're equal for men and women?
I think so.
Okay. Do you feel like that's across all the departments? Do you think it differs in any other departments?
Well, you know, in our department, because we are more than half women, mm-hmm. You know, it seems to be a reasonable amount of parity. I know in some departments there may be, like in the history department, for example, mm-hmm. I think there are only two women faculty members, maybe.
Yeah.
Tracy Weiss and Tanya Gavorkian, maybe one new one, I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's difficult to say in a department like that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you also have up in the School of Ed, you've got departments that are vastly women, mm-hmm. like elementary ed, special ed. Even Ed Foundations, I think, is mostly women. So I'm not sure. I you know, my experience is only with my department. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember any of my friends in other departments complaining bitterly about being denied a sabbatical if they applied for one. But I would imagine, once again, if you looked at the rates of application for sabbaticals, I bet more men apply for them.
Oh, really?
I bet they do. Well, maybe that's just a hunch. I mean, you'd have to do it, look at it statistically in terms right. of, like, the gender demographic of the whole faculty, but I bet they do, for the same reason that I can't go for the 10-day.
Right.
You know, it would be one thing if I were an Edith Wharton scholar, you know, and wanted to go to Yale or wherever her papers are and spend, yeah. you know, 10 days at a time in the library working with her papers. I couldn't do that.
Right.
So, but that being said, I have plans to apply for a sabbatical if we can ever fill my buddy's position. If we ever, ever, ever get another English ed person here, I will be applying for a sabbatical at sometime in the near future.
Okay. Then I ask, is Millersville a family-friendly institution?
No. I don't think so. For example, there's the Jenkins Center, that's where my son goes, my younger son, which is a terrific preschool, but it's not, used to be affiliated with the university, it's no longer affiliated with the university, as a matter of
okay.
fact, it owes them a bunch of money. And, you know, there's no subsidized childcare for students with children or faculty with children or
right.
staff with children. A lot of places do have things like that, that would make it a lot easier on women faculty in particular, you know, to be here longer, you know, just to run around and find wherever your kids are, takes a lot of your time. And if
yeah.
they were right here, that would probably have a useful effect on women faculty's working lives. So, no, I can't say they're family friendly.
You said that the, what was the child care center was?
Jenkins Center.
It used to be.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the whole story there, but it used to be affiliated with the School of Ed, and it was almost like a little model school for the students in elementary and early childhood education, and they still have a close relationship with that department, and the kids, they call them college buddies, will come down and kind of try out their lesson plans on the kindergartners mm-hmm. the 3-year-old preschool and the 4-year-old preschool, and it's a terrific, terrific school, but it's not affiliated with the university. There's no subsidy for faculty or employees of the university. It's totally separate now.
Right.
So, yeah.
All right. Do salary remuneration and rewards match job descriptions and responsibility for faculty members?
Well, they did when I first came. Mm-hmm. I think we've lost a lot of ground that way in terms of how our salaries compare in a regional kind of way. When I first came, they, from what everything that I understood and all the research that I did, they were very competitive and seemed to be, you know, an appropriate level of pay for the work that that was implied. But we've lost ground since I've been here a lot, to the point that the English ed position that I was referring to, we had a search this year, and we actually made a job offer to a candidate who is finishing up his PhD at the University of Delaware, but had been a classroom teacher for 20 years, and he would have to take a pay cut,
really,
to come to this position.
Wow.
From high school.
Wow.
From teaching high school.
Do you think that's related to the tuition here?
Well, I don't know. You probably saw the Snapper article, the Snapper monster faculty salaries. I'm going to kill Paul France myself, but there are some monster faculty salaries, as the article talked about, but
it's not the majority.
It's not, and I've been here 12 years, and you know, I make way less than half of some of the faculty salaries that he was quoting, and I work in the summer, and I do overloads, and I do all kind of extra things.
Mm-hmm.
So that just tickled me particularly, and especially it was very ironic because at that time that article came out, we knew that this candidate that we really wanted to come was wrestling with the notion of just how much of a pay cut he could take.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, there's something sick about this. This is a university position. He's been teaching in high school, granted, for 20 years, but a pay cut?
Yeah.
A big one. And I thought, that's sick. That's really sick.
That really surprises me.
Yeah, it's true. You know, well now, you know, public school teachers in Pennsylvania have pretty decent pay.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know how much of a pay cut it was, but it was possibly along the lines of half.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I don't know his salary and mm-hmm. where he is now, but I know the kind of entry level salary that you know first year assistant professors make. And when I first came here, my first year salary was $32,000, and you know, a lot of first-year teachers in Pennsylvania now will start off there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that was 12 years ago, so maybe it was a little different. But I think it might be in the low 40s now. 13 years later, that's not a whole lot of advancement and mm-hmm. keeping up with inflation. And
right.
if you're having a decent salary for 20 years, I mean, that teacher might be making 55, 60,000, mm-hmm. maybe more. And, you know, can you go from a $65,000 salary to 40?
Yeah.
And have family and kids going to college, and you can't do it.
Right.
So that's a mess. Now, I was, you know, coming out of graduate school where my salary was about $8,000 a year.
You're like, yes!
I'm like, oh my God. And when I was a public school teacher in North Carolina, my salary was like 17. So I doubled my North Carolina salary. I thought, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But North Carolina teachers make much less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it seemed to be, I think we've lost ground that way.
Okay.
For all faculty, women and men.
Right. How safe is Millersville for women? And how do you feel about the, like, sexual harassment policies?
Oh, I think, I mean, in my experience, I feel very safe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel very safe, like, walking around campus. I feel very safe in the buildings. And I feel very safe in my encounters with, you know, men and other possibly threatening people and women across campus. As a straight woman, I say that I'm not so sure how other gendered and sexual identifying people feel. I don't know if they feel as safe as I do. I think there's a certain amount of privilege in being a straight white woman on campus that maybe other people don't enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've never...
Never felt unsafe.
Yeah. No, never, never. I've never felt intimidated in that way by any superior or other male faculty. Now, I felt intimidated in ways that had nothing to do with my gender.
Right.
But that's just the usual political, you know, features of being in a department with people. But, you know, that comes as likely from other women as it does for men. So, yeah, I feel like it seems very safe to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
How might the university improve the quality of women's working conditions?
And yeah, I guess this has been a theme. You know, I think some kind of recognition of the kind of balancing act that most women faculty do with regard to work and family. Now that there are more, you know, women, young women faculty with children, I know since I've been in the department, there's been me and Ducky and Melinda and Jill and Elizabeth and Carrie and anybody else? I'm kind of going up and down the halls in my mind. So there have been at least six of us since I had my first child in 97.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot in one department. These are all, you know, assistant or associate professors with children. And, you know, Elizabeth resigned her full-time position and is only teaching as an adjunct now, one class a semester, in order to do that balance thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of us are still here just struggling with it. Now, Jill is the assistant chair. I don't know how she does it, but most of those other women, I know Carrie has a very active research agenda, and Ducky, I think, is on sabbatical this semester, so she's probably pursuing a pretty serious research agenda. But I know that all of us are you know, struggling with it, and we've had lots of kind of sidebar conversations about how to do it, and you know, we just kind of throw our hands up like, I don't know how we do it. It's really, maybe that's why I've missed 6 days this semester from class. I'm sick and my children are sick and it's a mess. But I think that is really the biggest issue that I've experienced and that I've seen in our department, that I don't know the degree to which it's the responsibility of the university to do that, but I know that if they were concerned with the working conditions that I live with, and apart from getting some heat in my office, you know, that would be the one major area that I know would benefit many, 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 many women, and a lot of young men, because some of the younger men are much more kind of personally involved in their children's raising than the older men. And mm-hmm. I think that's a fair statement and not a slur. And so, you know, for a lot of the young faculty who have young children, some kind of attention to that, some kind of, I don't know what it would take. I mean, the kind of things that my department chair tries to do kind of unofficially, maybe the university could be more institutional about, trying to, you know, give a little bit more consideration to faculty schedules when family balance issues are involved. And at the same time, you know, the other places, you know, having older parents is in some ways a very similar kind of situation to having young children. The requirements of your time need to be a little bit more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a little bit bad complaining because I already have a very flexible job in terms of my time, and I get to have some input when my classes meet, and so you know, my life is a lot better than many women's working lives. But in terms of an institution kind of trying to get the most out of me as their professional employee and also helping me kind of develop more professionally, that would be the area I think that they could really help the most, is trying to help faculty members with family kind of deal with that balance issue.
Okay. Would you describe when you got here, what was the climate for women? He has like a list of warm, chilly, frigid.
Huh. Well, I guess I would call it neutral. Now, maybe I'm just not very sensitive to those kind of issues, but, yeah, I never, you know, I got a lot more flack for not having finished my PhD when I was here than I did, being a woman. So, you know, that had a lot of, you know, I mean, they knew when I came that I was nowhere, I hadn't even started it, honestly. So I finished it when I was here, but, you know, that was a much bigger deal, and that was frigid for many of the older faculty in the department. You know, they were ready to, you know, pull rank on me all the time, and rightly so. I wasn't done. They were PhDs. I wasn't acting like I was. Nobody was calling me Dr. McCollum Clark, and it was no big deal to me. I understood. I'm like, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a much bigger deal, I think, in my department than my gender. At least it seemed to be.
Did Do you think that it's the same way now?
Like, I think so.
With the PhD.
I think so. Well, you see, now it's when I came here, we were really on the cusp of making a kind of a shift, and there were lots of faculty members, longtime faculty members in my department, who only had their master's level.
Okay.
So because of the kind of shift in the in that time in the this would have been the early 90s when I first came, but you know, in the 70s and 80s, there were a lot of faculty members who didn't have their PhD and never expected to, and became full professors even.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't quite, I mean, they had to kind of be careful about it, those who want to be snarky about it, because a lot of their colleagues themselves, you know, and at least I was doing mine, you know.
Yeah.
So they had to be a little careful. Now, you can't get here without one. There's just no way. So, yeah, it's not, it's, it, you know, we do have people come who are still finishing, but the expectation is just so changed that I haven't heard any kind of smack talking like that since I was a young person here. But that's okay. I was up for it. I don't mind confrontation. I don't back down from it. You know, I won't give people power over me by mm-hmm. kind of letting them define me with whatever they want to say. So they can say what they want to say. Slides off my back.
How would you describe the campus climate for, like, non-traditional students, like older women or disability people
right.
with disabilities?
I think that's a whole other ball of wax, and yeah. I know more about, you know, the returning adult students,
mm-hmm.
especially the non-traditional ones. I mean, they're all in a way non-traditional, but I mean folks who are, you know, coming out of a more working class background, who are taking the ACE program and
okay.
trying to do things like that. That's a very, very whole nother. And it's, I think once again, it's the whole issue of, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, this was mostly an undergraduate institution and traditional students only. And the needs and requirements and the just the issue, the things that returning adult students never think about. The university's just set up for the traditional age student.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been responsive. It wants to bring in the returning adult students. It sees a big market in that and wants their tuition dollars and wants to serve them and wants to be mm-hmm. a big community member and player. But it's not really shifted in ways that make it easy and meaningful. And, you know, I don't think returning adult students, and particularly those with disabilities, just slide in, you know, to Millersville. Mm-hmm. I don't think the skids are greased at all for them to just come right in. There are so many issues that they have to contend with that they should not have to contend with, both men and women. But, you know, most of my students are women, and so I see a lot of people changing careers and coming back to teach, you know, what I'm interested in teaching. So, you know, I hear some of the complaints from them. I even had a student in advanced comp one year write her proposal paper about that Millersville,
oh, really?
You know, did all this advertising and tried to bring in returning students, but did very little to serve their needs. And she wrote a terrific paper. I told her she should give it to the folks up in continuing ed, and she did. She actually had an interview, I mean, kind of scheduled a meeting with somebody up there and gave them her paper and talked about her point of view, and can't say if they literally listened to her or not, but at least she did take it to that level. I thought that was good.
That was good.
Yeah, well.
How might the university improve the quality of the academic environment for women?
For women students, or...
Yeah.
Both women okay. students. I don't know. I've never thought about that. Well, I guess there is a lot of research on, you know, kind of different ways of learning, different, you know, modalities that men and women students kind of fall into. And it would seem to me that most of the traditional university setup is mostly male, very patriarchal, you know, kind of knowledge transmission.
Mm-hmm.
You take it, you show me that you understand it. But I think women students graduate more than men students do. They have higher QPAs, generally speaking. They complete college a lot more than men do. So I think most women have kind of found ways to adapt to the kind of traditional university setup, and that's true across the country. But that doesn't mean that the academic culture of the institution is that welcoming to them. I don't know that much about it. That's a very interesting question that would be worth pursuing, especially for the Commission on Women. I don't know.
All right. That's about it. Do you have any final thoughts that you wanted to add?
No. I'm happy to be a part of the project.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. My pleasure.